Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome back to Bringing Up Us, the podcast. I am Matilda Sturridge. I'm so excited about this week's guest. She is the glorious Natalie Lee. You may also know her as Style Me Sunday. She is a blogger and influencer. She blogs about fashion and diversity and body positivity, which I need a lot of. She's also a mother to two daughters, and she's the founder of the Warrior Woman Project. I really hope that you enjoy this week's chat. Hello, Natalie Lee, aka Style Me Sunday. I'm so excited that you said yes to doing this podcast.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good, nice to be here.
Good, how's your Friday treating you?
Oh, it's all right. I've got a bit of a hangover and
delicious.
You know when you just try and cram too much in?
Yeah.
Always. I never ever learn. But, you know,
You're having your house done at the moment, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
And living at home while it's being done.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's a lot of fun. I've got dust in places you wouldn't think to have dust.
Nice! How much longer until it's all finished?
Hopefully another month and then we're done.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah.
So doable?
Yeah.
What, are you doing the whole thing?
Well, it's ended up being the whole thing, yeah.
How long have you been in your house for?
10 years. Yeah.
Oh my God.
First time we've ever done any major work. So much fucking money, man.
It's so expensive.
So expensive.
We're buying a house at the moment and we saw a house that we were like, oh yeah, we can do it up. And then we took a build around and I was like, nope. not going to do that.
It's just London builders.
And also, you know that they'll give you a price, and then it'll be another sort of £1 million on top of that, and then it's just it's all too scary. Grown up, so you're very brave and well done.
Thank you.
Okay, so we kick off each podcast with asking my guest, did you have an idea of the parent that you wanted to be pre babies?
Oh my God, doesn't everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought I was going to be like this Mother Earth type, you know, mother. It was going to be so romantic and I was never going to shout at my children.
Yeah.
But I was going to be really strict with my children. So they knew the boundaries. And now I'm like, oh, fucking hell, just take the iPad and stop talking to me. No, that sounds really bad.
No, it doesn't at all. We all know that.
In truth, I think hasn't been as enjoyable as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I thought I would be much more of a natural mother because I wanted kids so badly.
Yeah.
Like from the age of 16, because I've been with my husband since I was 16.
I was going to say, I know that.
Yeah.
That's
and I
incredible.
Just used to like badger him all the time. It's like, let's have children, let's have children. And he was like, no bloody way. But then we did when we were 29, which is quite a good age, actually, I think.
That's a really good age, especially if you were together since you were 16. I mean, you could have done it so much earlier. 29 seems like a perfect age to start.
Yeah, only because of him, yeah.
But I would have done it at 16.
Oh, yeah. It was, it has been a lot harder than I thought it would be. It really has. And the challenges that we have faced have been monumental. And they kind of have really taken me by surprise. It's definitely not as romantic as I thought it would be. I definitely had a very idealistic, romantic view of motherhood.
Do you feel like it's obviously? I think the shock of having a baby is always really, really difficult and very unromantic. And the first year is so hard, and lots of people don't make it through the first year. Do you think that the romance is back since your children are a bit older? Or do you think that it stays just a little bit tricky?
Kind of both. I think it definitely, I'm seeing it getting easier for sure. My children are 9 and 6 now, and we've just come back from Thailand, and we travelled all over Thailand, and that was lovely. It was really good. They're at a really nice age where they can travel with us and do things, and, you know, I don't have to bring, like, 10,000 suitcases full of crap.
Yes.
And yeah, they can just get on with things, and they've also started playing together, which is lovely.
Do they get on?
You know, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
When you're on holiday, do you feel like their relationship's better than when you're not on holiday?
Yeah, this was the first time really that I saw them properly playing with each other and enjoying each other's company. And that was so lovely to see.
That's
so
nice.
It was really nice. Yeah. So, yeah, it does get easier. But then, you know, more different challenges come.
Yeah.
My eldest is definitely sort of approaching that puberty age. And, yeah, emotions can be high at times. And there's lots of difficult conversations that I have to have. And sometimes I really have to push myself outside of my comfort zone to talk to her about things like masturbation or periods or boys and girls and, you know, it's sex.
I want to come on to that, all of that later. But before, I want to bring it back to the beginning. So you were a midwife before you did what you do now.
Yeah.
And you were a midwife before you were a mum.
Yeah, I was actually.
Did that prepare you at all for a childbirth, but also were you like, I really want to have a baby and be this person that has a baby? And
yeah. Yeah, I guess I did. I definitely wanted to. But no, it does not prepare you for motherhood in the slightest. And everyone's birth is completely different, isn't it? And you just can't.
Did it make you less afraid of birth?
Yeah, it definitely made
me
less
afraid. Were you like, I know everything that could happen and I'm prepared for everything? And
yeah, when I had an emergency cesarean, like I tried to do the whole water birth thing. Yeah. And it just wasn't happening after 24 hours. They were like, we need to do an emergency cesarean section.
Yeah.
And I knew what was happening. I've done this 1,000 times before. It was a lot scarier for my husband because he was like, shit, what are we going to do? She's going to die. And I was like, oh, this is just get the baby out.
Just do it.
So yeah, it did. I was much calmer. And I also knew that births can go peak-tong quite quickly, you know.
Yeah. So your first daughter was born, and she has something called, correct me if I'm wrong, brittle cornea syndrome.
Perfect.
Okay. And that means that she's losing her sight. Mm-hmm. So she's blind in her left eye.
Yes.
And then losing her sight in her right eye.
Mm-hmm.
How old was she when you found out that this... What is brittle cornea syndrome?
It's been a very long road to get a diagnosis. I always knew that there was something up. Her bones used to click a lot. Her eyes, the whites of her eyes were grey.
And is this when she was tiny?
Yeah,
a tiny baby. Yeah.
I even knew in pregnancy.
Did you?
When she used to kick me,
yeah.
I used to get a click in. And I used to say to the midwives and doctors, like, I'm getting this clicking, but no one else could feel it. And I felt so many, you know, pregnant women, and I knew that there was something going on.
That's really
so. It took a long time for me to keep sort of badgering the doctors, and I was like, and I made them do scans and everything, and they were like, there's nothing.
Can it be picked up in pregnancy, or is it really hard?
I don't think so. I don't think it can, actually. And it's a collagen disorder.
Right.
So it's similar to other ones. And she was misdiagnosed a few times. So brittle bone syndrome it's kind of, it's in the same family as that. And yeah. So she got diagnosed, I don't know, when, how old was she? I would say around 5 or 6, maybe.
Oh my God. She's okay, so really 9. Late.
Yeah.
And was she losing sight when she was, you know, 3, 4, 5?
I remember at about 4, I took her to the optician and, they were like, whoa, she's got a really strong prescription for someone so young. And I remember walking out of the optician's with her new glasses. And she went, Mummy, there's houses on this road. And I just burst into tears because I didn't realise she didn't know there was houses there. Because,
yeah,
like, literally on the road. And that was the first sort of inkling that there was something going on.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, you really should go be referred to Moorfields. So we were, and yeah, and we saw a specialist and he diagnosed her straight away. But she, the front of her cornea is very fragile, so there's a risk. If she gets any knocks to the eye, she would instantly be blinded. And one eye, as you said, is already, she can't see out of.
When did she lose the sight in that eye?
I don't know. Can't remember. Maybe a year or so ago. We've had so many operations and so many things. It kind of fluctuates and, you know, it's hard to keep track of. But, yeah, so we've got a little bit of sight in one eye and she copes really, really well with that.
Yeah.
And we had to change schools, actually, because the school she was at were awful and didn't cope very well with her losing her sight. Wanted her to stay inside at break times and lunch times and really isolated
her.
Yeah. Yeah, because they were scared.
Yeah.
And I get it. But, I mean, you know, kids need to socialise and they need to feel...
Well, yeah. She can't be told that she can't.
No. So... Yeah, we're really happy now with progress and the support we're getting.
And do the school give you a lot of support as
well?
Yeah,
they really do, actually.
What do
I
they
mean, we're on them. We're on their backs.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I think we're very lucky in where we are. You know, there's two of us. We're in quite a good position. But other people who, you know, maybe English isn't their first language or they just, I think they would get away with a lot less if you weren't on them constantly.
Yeah.
There's another little girl who's got exactly the same syndrome, actually. It's really, really rare.
At her school?
No, in London.
Right.
And we met her once and her parents are refugees.
Yeah.
And, like, the difference in support that she's getting to our daughter is really huge. So yeah, you have to fight for stuff really hard.
Yeah, I mean you do. Especially support in schools as well. You're right there. So, you know, you have to make sure that they're getting everything that they can get, but also they're having as normal time as possible.
Yeah.
And not
absolutely.
Being felt isolated. I was just saying to Natalie earlier that I learned about your daughter's condition through the CBBC documentary called My Life, which is mine and Rudy's favourite show.
I just think
it's amazing. It's this documentary that follows children from all over the world and it's just kind of incredible. And each child has a different experience, whether it's something like your daughter's condition or
homelessness.
Which the homelessness one was so brilliant and so moving, and it's just so important. And also for kids, especially Rudy, you know, he's 8, his world is his own world.
Yeah.
And to see what other children go through that isn't his world.
They do it really well.
And they just do it so kind of, it's really powerful. And anyway, we watched your documentary and we just loved it. I thought your daughter was absolutely incredible and so positive, but also just unfrightened.
Yeah.
I think for me, if it was me and someone says, you know, you might lose all of your sight soon, immediately you go into panic mode. And she was just so kind of just like, yeah, this is my life and this is who I am. And I'm not, you know, it doesn't make me, yes, I am different, but it doesn't make me any different. Mm. And her learning how to read Braille was so... And really now...
She's getting so good at
it. It's so amazing. And now also me and Rudy are kind of like, we always touch under...
The traffic light lights thing.
And you sort of, you touch under it, sort of vibrates. And on like a Lemsip, there's a Braille. And like, we're so... She's just aware. So aware.
Yeah.
And it's also, we were actually doing it on a Lemsip packet the other day. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how do you... How do you learn that? How is she taught to read again?
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole nother language. It's like learning a whole nother language. And we're learning too, but we're learning with our sight on the computer.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's tricky.
Does she now read in Braille more than she reads?
No, not at the moment.
Yeah.
No, it's working alongside it. But while she's got some sight, she likes, she does listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Yes.
Like Jacqueline Wilson is her like ultimate.
We went out and bought a Jacqueline Wilson book after.
Did you?
Rudy was like, who is this writer that I want to?
Yeah,
she says she's great.
Yeah. She actually tackles some really gritty topics. She does a lot of,
really gritty topics.
Yeah.
Lots of, which is kind of amazing.
Like domestic violence.
Domestic violence, step parenting, sort of like single child, like it's sort of, it's.
Yeah.
Also, you know, yeah. Word Tracy Beaker.
Yeah.
The dumping ground.
Yeah.
But she's brilliant. I loved her when I was a child and she's still going strong. One of the things in the documentary that you speak about is her bucket list.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. How is she doing on her bucket list? Her bucket list is wanting to do things before that she loses sight.
Yeah.
It was a pretty extensive bucket list.
She's doing good and it keeps getting bloody bigger. Yeah. That's the problem. It's just going to keep going on and on and on. But yeah, she's doing great. And it's a really good focus for us. It's nice to have something like stuff to look forward to. And yeah, it's good. But... she gets away with a lot.
I bet. Do they know how quickly her sight will go?
No idea. And that's the really tricky thing about it. I kind of feel like I'm always on edge. I'm always waiting for that phone call. You know, when school call us up, your heart is in your mouth. And usually, obviously, it's nothing. She's fallen over or something. But... it's that tricky, just not knowing. And when that time does come, you know, how we deal with it. I don't know how we're going to deal with it, but we're going to deal with it. And it's going to be fucking tough. There's no two ways getting around it. But, you know, we will do what we can, get all the support we can and get on with it.
Yeah. I know, it's a very... difficult thing, and I think that she's amazing and you're amazing and kind of both being very, very brave. And then you have another daughter.
I do. Autumn.
Is she called Autumn?
She's six.
I love that name.
She's a little character. She is.
She looks amazing. She looks so beautiful. She's both so beautiful.
She's always dancing. I think she's going to be a stripper when she's older.
Perfect.
She
dances. That's the perfect job.
She dances like
a
stripper.
Autumn the stripper is also seriously good.
Yeah. My husband's like, where has she got these moves from? Probably me.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, me. I'm a great dancer. Why do you ask?
Yeah.
I think when you have a child, or if you have a child, I can imagine that has... a disability, or you know, is going to have operations and has lots of attention. Does she find that difficult ever, or is she like, whatever?
We've worked really hard at not isolating her or not giving her enough attention. We're quite conscious of that. I think she does sometimes, but she's also very overprotective of her sister as well. So, no, she's a really good kid. She's just really kind and really loving and supportive. And we're quite, one of the things we've worked really hard on is talking about our feelings. So, you know, when you are struggling with a condition or something, you know, it's really, it can be easy to be feel really angry and frustrated and, you know, resentful. But we've worked really hard on every single person in the family identifying how they're feeling and talking about it, and she's really good at that. So
that's so important. I think kids that can talk is the most amazing thing, and who can express themselves and also talk about a worry.
Yeah,
I know lots of kids that just don't do that, and I, you know, with Rudy, I'm so lucky in the fact that he's such a good speaker.
That name.
Do you?
Oh, yeah, thanks. I love it.
He's amazing. He's so kind of articulate.
Is he?
Way more articulate than I mean, yeah. I'm really unarticulate.
I don't think so.
I am right now. But he's,
I think it's
so
inarticulate.
Yeah, exactly. See? No! I can't do it! But he's just, he just talks, and he talks about all of his worries.
Does he?
And he'll come up to me at the end of the night, he'll kind of say, it's, the bedtime worry is always, you know, the big one, but he'll always sort of talk about his day and talk about what makes him sad and what makes him happy. And he's super sensitive, and I feel so lucky to have that, because I know there are some kids that are just like, hold it in.
Yeah. And that doesn't do anyone any favours, does it?
And also just in life, I think I definitely have always held lots of things in. And I was so worried that I would have a child that would hold things in.
So have you pushed yourself, do you think, to try and get him to talk more?
Yeah, I feel like I have. And I feel like I've also talked to him about my... I don't sort of sugarcoat things. I talked to him about my worries. Obviously not,
not much, all of them.
But I kind of, you know, go, you know, yeah, not everyone.
Yeah.
But I go, God, yeah, today was really hard. And this is why I found today hard. And, oh, God, you know, I'm a bit worried about this. And, or I'm a bit nervous about this. And so he feels that it's okay for him to be like...
expressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, he always surprised me. He's so great.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. I now want to talk about your blog and body positivity. Mm-hmm. And you started your blog in 2012.
Yeah, 7 years ago.
Yeah. I also can't do math. you started your blog, so you stopped being a midwife, if I've done my research right, when your second daughter was born.
Yeah.
Because...
You're good.
Yes.
You're good.
Thanks. I'm a really good researcher. I'm not a good talker, but I'm a good researcher.
No, you are. You are really good.
So you stopped when your second daughter was born because, as we all know, having children is the most all-consuming thing, and it's pretty impossible to have any job. Let alone a shift job.
Yeah. Also, we had lots of doctor's appointments and stuff with our eldest.
Yeah.
I found that a real struggle. Real struggle. I started the blog because I was bored.
Did you know that you were going to start a blog? When you were like, I'm not going to be a midwife anymore, I'm going to go into full-time mum. You go like, I'm going to do this for myself?
No, literally just like one day I was like, oh, what shall I do? I need something. I need to do something. But I need it to work for the family. I can't be away from the house. And I really like fashion. It started off as a fashion blog. And I just loved it. I loved doing it. It wasn't so much all about me so much then. It was like new brands, talking about new brands, talking about fashion. And yeah, it was just nice because I didn't have any qualifications in it. And that's the thing about a blog. That's the good and bad thing about blogs. Anyone can start them up.
How do you make them become popular though? How do you do a successful blog?
I don't know. I think... You've either got that connection with people or you haven't, haven't you?
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more.
And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And I don't know what the magic formula is.
Did you start your Instagram at the same time?
Yeah.
And did you have just an Instagram, just a normal, you just used it for you, and then suddenly you had a blog and then you connected the blog and the Instagram?
I've never used the Instagram personally.
Yeah.
It's always been connected with the blog. Yeah. It's always been Style Me Sunday.
Yeah. And does Instagram, do you think, help people get your, I feel like fan base is the wrong word, but get your followers through, they watch, see your Instagram and they go, okay, I want to read what she's writing about fashion and
yeah, and they did. I mean, I don't really update my blog anymore. I mean, I don't know that many people who do still write blogs because Instagram's kind of taken over. And it can be a full-time, thing. I try and post really regularly. I work with brands and do ads, and that's enough.
Yeah.
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 I'm writing blogs takes ages. It takes a long time. So I haven't really written anything for ages, but Instagram is it. Also, I think like people digest information much more differently now, and they want like snapshots, they want really quick, easy fixes, and I just feel like
people don't sit down and read.
It's
true.
You're like, my attention span is so short. Literally I'll do something and then a couple of minutes I'm bored of this, let's go, do you know what I mean? And it's just, I think that's probably to do with social media.
When did it stop being about fashion and start sort of turn into being about sort of diversity and body positivity?
I think it was about two to three years ago, I think. I went to a talk and somebody said something that really struck me, and it was, the gist of it was basically, you've got a voice and use your voice, and why would you try and just fit in with what everyone else is doing? And it just really struck me, and I thought, do you know what? I've been playing it really safe for too long, and I actually just want to do stuff that really nourishes me and stuff that I'm really bothered about. I was scared about talking about race or talking about like wanking or, I was scared about being too controversial, and therefore I was just being like everyone else, and it was a bit dull really. And as soon as I started like poking my head up and like, talking about stuff I was really passionate about, people started really connecting with it, and it changed, and now I will get, my boobs out or my tummy out, and, it's good because it makes people feel better, and that makes me feel better.
It's amazing and so positive, and it's bodies are so complicated. And do you think that it all starts from your mother, how you feel about your own body?
It's a big question.
Yeah. Because I've been thinking about it so much recently. I feel like I'm a really confident person, and I love my life and I love my friends and I'm in a great relationship and I have an amazing child. And throughout my whole life, I am super body conscious. But I don't know how many people, if you ask my friend, they would be like, no, she's not. She's, she's really, she loves her body. She's really confident. And I do love my body.
Oh, you hide it well.
Oh, so well.
Do you? Yeah.
And I have only just kind of started talking about it. And actually, we're going away tomorrow for 4 nights without Rudy, with four of my best friends and their husbands and boyfriends. And I've just never done this. Suddenly, I think we're all getting older and everyone's thinking about having babies, and everyone sort of realised that I was actually had Rudy so young that I've never really done very many friends' holidays.
Yeah.
We're all going away and I'm so excited. And I was talking to my friend Molly about it, and I was like, I've just got anxiety about being in a swimming costume in front of everyone. And she was like,
so many of us have.
She's like, what? And she was like, I never thought that. And I was like, yeah. And I've been trying to think about when it started and why I'm so self-conscious of my body and why I'm so worried about cellulite, which I'm so worried about.
Are you?
Yeah. And I just don't know where it starts and how to get the fuck over myself.
I mean, I think our parents are so important in terms of shaping our views and how we think about ourselves. And I grew up with a mum who was constantly on a diet, who yo-yoed a lot, and who was incredibly beautiful but also incredibly self-conscious. And it's just, it was the norm to not like yourself, to hate your body, and to do everything you can to change it, because it's big business.
Yeah.
And that's, it's a marketing ploy. And I feel like we're trying to take the narrative back now and trying to grab it back. But yeah, that definitely did have an impact on me and how I viewed my body. And it was really, and when I had children, that's when it kind of switched for me, especially having girls. I looked at my body in the mirror, absolutely hated what I saw. And I was so sad. I was like, I thought, like, after seeing my postnatal body, I was just like, I'm done. Like, I've got nothing else to give. Yeah. Like, I'm never going to look attractive again. I'm never going to be able to wear a bikini ever again, because who the fuck wants to see all this cellulite and all this stretch marks? And then I thought, God, that's so dark and so sad.
It's so dark and it is so sad, and that we program ourselves to think like
this.
Yeah,
but then I thought, but what if my girls what if that was my daughter who was looking in the mirror and thought the same? What would I say to her? And that just suddenly, like, a switch turned, and I was like, I'm going to try really hard to crack this cycle, because I don't want to bring up another generation of children who loathe looking in the mirror and who want to hide their bodies and who are held back, because it holds us back in so many arenas of our lives. You know, I don't want that self-consciousness to stop them from achieving things, because that's really... that's shit.
Yeah. How do you teach your girls to love their bodies?
Well, first of all, you role model, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm so hyper aware of not being critical about my body in front of my... I hear women all the time putting themselves down so much, and it just breaks my heart, especially when you can see the little ears, like, they're listening, they're watching every single thing we do. And if you hate yourself, they're gonna hate themselves, because that's what they're you know, have been conditioned to do because they see it. So, yeah, never, ever talk about my body in a derogatory way. I'll never weigh myself. I've thrown away the scales a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I think that was really important for me because I used to weigh myself every single day. And that would determine whether I was having a good day or a bad day.
I've never owned scales because I just know that if I did...
Obsessed.
Not only would I become obsessed, but I would just be deeply unhappy. And actually saying that, we never had scales in our house growing up.
Did you not?
No. I sort of grew up in... Like, my mother is so beautiful and naturally so skinny. It's not that she ever sort of spoke about her body, but I had two brothers that, you know, were really kind of skinny and tall. I was really sort of skinny until I hit puberty and suddenly my boobs went to a G size over 2 years.
That's hard.
And
you're a kid, it's hard.
And it was and I had hips and I was so athletic, and then I couldn't run the 100 metres anymore because I had such big boobs and it was really painful.
And also unwanted attention as well. Yes. That's really difficult.
I stopped running at a sports day when a boy shouted out, "Look at her breasts." And I was so...
mortified.
And I was like 14 and I just thought like... And they kept growing. And I had these brothers that were so skinny and this sort of really petite mum. And I was just like, where has like this curvy girl come from? I was like, I had no... And also I didn't know how to dress myself. I was so worried of dressing my boobs without them looking sexy. I didn't want to be sexy. I was like always, I wore literally 90s.
Well, and it must be difficult if you didn't have a mother who, you know, had the same sort of figure as you.
Yeah.
Because you had nothing to sort of, you know, look up to and go off. But yeah, I can imagine that must have been really hard.
And I remember the day so well. And I must have been around 15 and we were away and we were about to go swimming and I looked in the mirror and I went, oh, I don't really like that. And I've never done that before. I've always just not cared. I saw cellulite and I was like, well, where's that come from? And I was like, oh, I don't like the look of that. And since that day, don't think I've ever looked in the mirror and gone, like, I've looked in the mirror and gone like, oh yeah, you know, I look nice and my body looks nice, but I've always gone like, but it could be better, rather than go like, fuck, I have a great body and I'm a really happy person, and why should I worry about those? Why does that affect my mood or make me feel sad?
Yeah.
And I find it so depressing that I feel like that. And I really, you know, want to stop feeling like that. And also I wouldn't, you know, don't ever want to have a child like you who feels like that. And I do the same. You know, I've, you know, never sort of be in front of Rudy and say, God, I don't like this. But on holiday, sometimes I find myself with a towel and then
covering
drop it
up
just before I get in the pool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, who am I?
Celebrate
like,
that shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so this holiday, I've said I'm just going to fucking push myself and be really proud of myself.
I want to see pictures.
I'll send pictures. And also, I'm in a relationship with a man who loves my body.
I bet he bloody
does. And tells me all the time.
Oh.
And it's like, but still, why? When he says it, I'm still like, but do you?
I don't believe you.
Yeah, but do you in my head?
And I bet it does.
It's just such a... And your Instagram is amazing because... And actually, you did a Fuck You Friday when you were on holiday and it was about cellulite and I read it and I was like, yes. Like, what is wrong? Like, and also, I look at that and go like, fuck, that woman has a banging body. I don't look at that and go like, oh, she's doing a Fuck You Friday about cellulite and wears it. It's just like, oh, look at that. It's amazing. And it's
babies
just...
have cellulite.
Yes.
Newborn babies have cellulite.
Yes.
And we don't like look at them and go, oh, look at that cellulite.
Yeah.
You know, we're conditioned to think that cellulite is something horrible.
It's ugly. You're conditioned to think it's an
normal.
Ugly thing. And also being brought up sort of, you know, in the 90s and you have all these sort of anorexic...
Yeah,
heroin chic thing. And you're like, oh, that's what's beautiful. And then it's just like, no, it's not.
No.
Being you is beautiful.
Yeah.
No matter how you look. And also, I don't want to spend my whole life going, I wish I looked different, or...
It's time-consuming.
So time-consuming.
Yeah, and it takes up headspace that you could be, you know, utilising elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. And there's no magic formula to, you know, to fixing it. You've just got to keep working on it and also, you know, keep checking in with yourself. Mm. You know, when you're getting those thoughts, just notice them, be aware of them. And... try and flip it. It's not easy. It's really not easy.
Yeah. But just try and just thank you for your body positivity. Giving me body positivity. The last thing I want to quickly talk about is obviously my favourite, sex and masturbation and all things. Really good fun.
My favourite topic.
And also sort of just sex education for children as well. As in, I'm someone that will freely and openly talk about sex and masturbation, and I've never... been uncomfortable about it. Mm-hmm. Never really been uncomfortable about it around friends. Have always quite openly spoken about it. None of my friends will, bar the younger. I feel like so Scarlett Curtis and Honey Ross, who are producers in the Pink Protest of this podcast, they talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, I never. What? My generation, I would sit down and be like, oh God, talk about masturbation, and someone's like, I'm sorry, what?
I know, my generation too. Like, I still haven't talked to my mum about sex. Like, yeah. I don't think I could ever bring myself to talk to my mum about sex. But I'm like, actually, and when I discovered, like, masturbation properly, it's really later on in life that I've really got into it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's the best thing ever. See, I think I got into it quite young, but never spoke about. I would never and have never spoken about my mum.
It was on the down low.
Yeah, but also I was never taught about masturbation.
No, I know.
And I remember when I first did it, I was like, "Whoa, I can do this to myself. This is I'm going to have great fun."
I know, and it's just, you know, it's so important that we teach our kids not to feel ashamed of exploring their own bodies. You know, I don't remember knowing what a clitoris was when I was a kid. In fact, my first sexual relationship, I don't want to go down that path, but anyway, my first sexual relationship, he definitely didn't know what a clitoris was.
Really?
I didn't know what a clitoris was. Sex was fucking shit.
The first time, you're like, really? No, well, that's what I was so confused.
And I was like,
because
why do I have sex?
Masturbating before I lost my virginity. And when I lost my virginity, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is terrible. Like, I'm way better. Like, what?
Who would do that?
The person that I lost my virginity to is still a great friend, so I really have to listen to this. Sorry, Max.
Yeah, so it took me a long time to discover my clitoris. And now I have, like, I'm just addicted.
Yeah. It's the best thing ever.
And also... I've recently been, not recently, a few months, recently been introduced to this new vibrator, which is fucking mind-blowing.
I've never used a vibrator. I know.
Oh my God.
I know.
If you had told me that before, I would have brought you one. Because I'm like, this is my gift to you. I want to spread that shit everywhere. There's a couple of versions, but there's the womanizer and the Lilo version. But basically, it's got this sucky thing, and you put it on your clit and it sucks your clit. And oh my fucking God, I give it to my friends as presents.
Oh my God.
And
do you use it alone or do you use it with your husband?
I use it alone. Yeah.
Do you use any toys with your husband, or would he be like, nope?
Occasionally, I'm not.
But they're more.
They
of a...
tend to get in the way. To be honest, I think I prefer.
It's a bit fiddly.
I prefer my hand when when we're doing.
Yeah,
yeah.
When we're doing the sex. Do you? I mean, I think it's amazing to be open about it, and I don't know how to. And Rudy gets to that age where it's sort of, you know, going through puberty and everything's changing.
How old is he?
Oh, he's eight. No, he not for a while. Please.
What? Masturbation?
Well, I mean, I don't know how to talk to him about it yet.
You need to talk to him
about it. What do I do?
He's getting those feelings.
I know that he is, and I know that, you know, a willy growing is the most exciting thing in the world for him. But it's like, I'm still a bit like, Yeah. And Ollie, my partner, I'm like, oh, well, you could do it. And he's like, I'm not the biological father.
I'm not doing that shit.
And I'm
no.
like, please.
You definitely, like, yeah. My eldest is 9 and I started talking to her about it, I think at 6.
What do you say? How do you broach that conversation?
Which one?
To
about
a 6-year-old?
About sex or?
About what? Sex and about masturbation. About both.
I mean, I've been like, if they are ready to ask a question, they deserve a good answer.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe girls are a little bit more inquisitive and slightly, you know, more mature than boys as yeah. well. So she was asking some, you know, really in-depth questions about sex, and I was just being brutally honest and telling her everything she needed to know. And it's really... It's been really good. So it's a good foundation for us to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And I often sort of say, you know, talk about self-pleasure and, like, if you want to do it, just do it. Just go and find yourself some private time.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we've got this rule that we have to knock when we go into the bedroom and stuff like that.
Put a sock on the door, the classic. That's...
But, yeah, I think... It is really quite cringy and difficult, but it's important.
So important, and also so amazing to have a mother that talks about it with you and makes you feel safe. And
yeah.
I think that we can all relate to the first time you do it, you feel a little bit like you've done something bad, or
yeah.
you're a bit kind of confused and vulnerable.
Yeah, and well, I didn't know. I remember humping teddies quite a lot.
Yeah, I remember
you know?
That.
I mean, I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like, what
yeah.
is this?
Why is it that your body just going like this?
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah. yeah. I do remember being very ashamed of it.
Yeah,
it was definitely
I had
linked.
So much shame.
Yeah,
so much shame to it.
And that's what I want to try and, you know, stop. You know, yeah, that's just. It's just normal and so much safer than having sex. It's so
yes.
much like...
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
As we know, more yeah. pleasurable more, sometimes.
Way more pleasurable.
And yeah, I just really want to teach, you know, kids that exploring yourself before somebody else explores your body is really important.
I think it's the way to a healthy sex life. How are
Absolutely.
You meant to find yourself, how is someone else meant to find yourself sexy or give you pleasure if you have no idea
what you like?
What you like and your body. And
yeah.
I have a friend who recently had never masturbated and she never had good sex. And I said, it's because you don't know yourself. Just spend some time with your body and then sex will become a whole different thing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, masturbation and sex are great things, guys.
Yeah, they are the key key to happiness.
We end each podcast, I don't want it to end, this has been so good, with asking the question, if you could give yourself one bit of advice pre-parent, what would it be?
One bit of advice. I think, I don't know, maybe something about not being judgmental. I was one of those pre-kids, I was one of those people who looked at other parents and was like, oh my God, I'm never doing that, ever. And I was very opinionated, like, I don't know, we just... so judgmental and so opinionated, and then and I've been really humbled by motherhood, by you know, having a child with a disability, and I'm so much less judgmental now. And I think I would have just said, you know, just shut up and stop making all these shit opinions and just go with the flow. You don't really know what it's going to be like, but yeah.
I think that's a great bit of advice. Natalie Lee, you have been amazing.
Thank you
so much.
I loved it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.